Move it, you're scaring my chicken.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This Melrose Place. I don't have my notes because I only have one monitor. Let's make up a title for this one. This one's called...
Nice cock.
Wow.
I fucking hate this.
No?
Welcome, everybody.
No, hang on.
Okay.
Move it. You're scaring my chicken.
Hello, everybody. This is the wrong button.
Leave it.
I'm not angry. I'm just disappointed.
Move it. You're scaring my chicken.
This is Again With This. Melrose Place. Season 5. Episode 17. Better Homes and Condos. Now, here are your hosts.
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
Our second of four tapings today. Here we are at the end of all things. Hi,
Take
Sarah.
Take 5. Hi.
Hi, Dave.
Word. Oh, boy.
We got
Don't
a lot
clips.
To
Keep
tell
going,
you.
But I got to go find my drink. That's what's wrong.
Yeah, that's drink. What's wrong.
Yeah.
If you got plenty clips, just reenact them.
Okay.
We won't need to. We have a lot to get through. Plenty of time for Dave to go even outside of the house to get a drink for himself. So let's get to it.
Like an alcoholic drink. Okay. Mm-hmm. Speaking of things for which you need booze, again with this 102. Dropping July 1st,
Happy
let's
Canada
watch
Day.
Courtney Thorne Smith in Fast Times, the series.
Mm, that's a show that happened. Remember, mm-hmm. You might remember The Road to Melrose, that special we watched a few months ago. It is mentioned and we found it. As well, the June episode of Again With Them, our monthly digest recap of Jenny and Tori's podcast 90210 OMG, is dropping June 30th. This is a perk for our Patreon supporters at the $5 level and up. Kick up that pledge if you can. And just to let everyone know, they have been bonkers with the bonus episodes this month. Granted, they're all interviews and they're pretty short. But still, if you wanted to hear all about Billy Vera's career, now's your chance. Actually, don't. We'll just tell you these salient details. So $5, in my opinion, a bargain.
Yeah. And please spare yourselves. Let us do it.
Yes.
We are professionals.
That's right.
We also want to tell you what is coming up on our main feed in the month of July. We're going to be away Cox is what. We're going to be away for a couple of weeks at the start of July for a lot of very important reasons. Chicken husbandry for one.
Sure.
July 4th, Canada Day. My wedding anniversary.
Yep. Me seeing my parents for the first time in about 2.5 years. Why? You know why. However, we've shaken up our taping schedule so we don't have to take any weeks off from the free feed, even though some of these episodes are going to be a little more experimental.
Indeed. On July 4th, we will be bringing two episodes out from behind the Patreon paywall, both featuring American hero Laura Layton.
That's right.
We will be talking about her performances on Dynasty, that is bonus episode 58, and in the TV movie A Texas Tragedy, bonus episode 81. And then on damn it. And then on July 8th, after I've murdered Dave, we'll drop Again with This 103. Yeah. Let's watch Doug Savant in Bonnie and Clyde: the true story.
A lot of Texas content for that week. On July 11th, we are heading back into the Thunderdome, and this time it'll be secondary characters from Melrose Place fighting to the death. Who will prevail? Start placing your bets now. Just kidding. Thunderdome is for exhibition purposes only. Please, no wagering.
And on July 18th, Dave and I are going to be facing off in a very special chicken noises who will break first game. Just kidding. It's actually, God damn it. It's actually a very special Starverse game, especially tailored for one person who knows quite a lot about Beverly Hills 90210 and Melrose Place, and one person who does not know very much at all.
But likes to be disrupted.
Who?
On July 25th, we'll need your help because we're going to take your calls and answer your questions and reply to your comments. So please call our brand new Google Voice number, 210-920-4699. That will also be in the show notes. Leave us a voicemail. We may play it in this episode. We're very excited for this. Ring. Sadly, they
Hello,
don't let you pick your
line.
they don't let you pick your own number anymore, which is why we couldn't find any like area code MELROSE. So we just had to take what they gave us, 210-920-4699.
Or 210-920-HO99.
Oh.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
I have that little, you know, revise your phone number into a phrase.
I love it.
Bookmarked. Anyway, then our Patreon supporters at the $5 level and up will get the July Again With Them on Thursday, July 28th. You know what that is because we just talked about the June one at the beginning of this rundown.
Yep. And finally, we'll be back on the Melrose beat on Monday, August 1st to cover season 5, episode 18, Great Sexpectations. And your patience through July will be rewarded because Great Sexpectations is a 2-hour episode of Melrose Place.
And it has the fucking gall to be called Great Sexpectations.
Honestly.
I mean, it's not I Am Curious Melrose, but no, it's pretty fucking bad.
It is.
Anywho, throughout all of this, new Patreon bonus episodes will drop every Friday, and we will tease those throughout July so you know what to get excited about and when. We are excited to go off format with these episodes, so stay with us. We think they will be fun.
We do. So join us at patreon.com/againwiththis for more information, more perks, more fun. Thank you.
Any comment from the hen house?
All right, let's get into this episode. Starting with our C plot, C for chicken. Amanda doesn't like being single, and Taylor doesn't like Kyle's old military buddy. Kyle is in Kyle's kitchen chopping when the door opens behind him and the score gets very concerned. Clip 2.
Rosella introduces Chicken Tonight Simmer Sauces, and suddenly everybody's saying,
I feel like chicken tonight, like chicken tonight.
Choose from 6 tasty new sauces with only the best Rosella vegetables. Try chicken cacciatore or delicious creamy chicken with mushrooms. Just brown the chicken, simmer, and serve.
I feel like chicken tonight,
Mom, can we have chicken tonight tomorrow?
Chicken tonight!
Oh, why is it so unsettling to hear a child speak in an Australian accent?
Also, you know who was narrating that?
No.
Chris Marchette.
Yes, probably. Sidebar about that commercial. There's a Simpsons gag in a 90s episode where everyone starts singing that song, and Dave didn't realize that was a real product until I told him.
I didn't either until just now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. The product is called Chicken Tonight.
Yeah. It's
Will the Purdue pick commercial make an appearance later in this episode? Who can say? Certainly not I.
Who indeed? Dave, can you play the actual clip too?
The officer's mess, butt wipe.
If I'm the wipe, you're the butt.
It's butt wipe, sir!
Sir, butt, sir!
All right.
Where you been, man?
I've been around here and there.
Let me look at you.
I just got into town.
Where are you gonna stay?
Staying with you, buddy. Just like old days.
Semper Fi, huh?
Hey, sweetheart. Look who's here.
Hey, Nick. Good to see you.
Come out of the bar, soldier. Buy you a drink.
A little early in the day for a drink, isn't it, babe?
Well, a special occasion.
I want him gone by the morning.
Look, I know Nick has had his trouble in the past. There's nobody I'd rather have watching my back in a firefight.
Desert Storm is over.
He goes when he's ready to go.
Is Desert Storm order over,
order
first of all? Second, you can see in the visual aids what Nick's entrance is, which is he, like, sneaks up behind Kyle and puts a knife to his throat, and that's when they do all that clowning. But I don't know how it is in the Marines, but where I come from, if you want to stay with someone, you ask. You don't just announce, I am staying with you. Surprise.
Yeah. Especially not, I mean, there was just like a lot of, that was a big knife. There was a lot of butt wipe.
Yeah.
Like with an asterisk. I don't know what's going on. Mm-hmm. And but I do know this. They should have kissed because mm-hmm. Taylor's annoying and whatever the assumptions that are being made, I think they're probably correct on all of our parts. If you know what I mean.
Yeah, they got chemistry. This is Scott Plank as Nick. We just talked about his performance as Tori Spelling's pimp in our 100th again with this bonus episode on co-ed call girl. Check that out. Patreon.com/againwiththis. Over to D&D After Hours, where Amanda is despondently grieving her latest dead boss, Clip 3.
I've never seen a funeral go on for so long. His eulogies were endless.
A lot of people admired my father.
People were afraid of him. You know that better than anyone.
Yeah, I was so afraid that I killed him.
Craig, he had a heart attack. He died instantly. You're off the hook. Self-pity is purely optional.
Don't you ever take a day off from being Amanda Woodward?
Sometimes, but I usually regret it.
Why would you ever take a day off from being Amanda Woodward if you were Amanda Woodward? That's a good thing to be, in my opinion.
No, it's like those mugs that are like, always be yourself unless you can be Bigfoot, in which case, be Bigfoot. Do I own that mug? Yes, I do.
Well, I didn't think that was an example you just plucked out of the air.
Pluck.
Unless you can be D.B. Cooper. So, yeah, I would always be Amanda Woodward.
Yeah. So she tries to give Craig half of the calls they need to roll, but he snits that he can't work today, which, like, maybe you shouldn't have come to the office then. Go home, stupid. Why are you here? This is the corollary of leave things in your car. Don't go to locations you don't intend to stay. Anyway, when Amanda comes around the corner, she sees Peter sitting at her desk. She is happy to see him and then has to try and hide her dismay when he says he's just there to give her his new contact info at the apartment he rented at the marina, of course, where all the other divorced men live.
Mm-hmm.
She comments that this feels permanent, but it's just month to month and if she wants to get together. But then his pager goes off with a call about Michael, whom we will get to. And on his way out, Peter very casually tells Amanda to call him sometime. And sure enough, we then see Peter and his turtleneck having a turtleneck and wine kind of night in front of the fire.
Mm-hmm.
When Amanda calls, officially to ask after Michael, but also to hear a friendly voice, Peter can be as friendly as she wants. She doesn't know what she wants, but when he suggests reconciliation, tells him not to push it and also declines a late night dinner, but she'll bring breakfast to his place the next morning. And then he hangs up and the weird smile, please go to the visual aids, just this shot I happened to pause on. He's just looking into the distance. He's all alone, making this absolute smelling a fart face. It's
yes, he really. Yeah, you could almost hear the that preceded this screenshot. It's really quite amazing.
Meanwhile, Amanda gazes wistfully at his framed portrait on her desk, which is him in front of his old house that he lost because Sydney didn't pay the bills. And also, it was his own fault because he put it in his corporation's name. Over to the McBride apartment, where Nick and Kyle are arm wrestling between the many empty beer bottles on the table, which, of course, soon clatter to the floor, summoning a furious Taylor. She's dressed, so I guess it's still a reasonable hour, but it's still obnoxious of them. This is my biggest complaint about people's inconsideration. Fucking shut up when people are trying to sleep. It's the rudest thing. Anyway, as she stands there with her arms crossed, Nick says they need more beer. Kyle offers to go get some, leaving Nick to clean up and absorb the brunt of Taylor's irritation in clip four.
Place is kind of small for wrestling, don't you think?
Boys will be boys.
So how long are you planning on staying, Nick?
I don't know. Starting to like it here.
Well, LA's a real tough town to break into, you know.
Hey, you're the one to drag my man out to La La Land. I'm just looking out for him.
He can take care of himself, and I don't want you distracting him right now. The restaurant needs his full concentration. It needs both ours.
I'll stay out of your way. You stay out of mine.
Oh, I'd never get in your way, Nick, unless I had to.
Don't be so jumpy, sugar. Just going out for some air.
So what you can't see, although it's in the visual aids, is he sort of closes the space between them and she, like, brandishes a piece of broken bottle at him. So whatever history these two have, it's not great. I don't like Taylor either, but I don't like this more.
Yeah, seriously. Like, I mean, there's not liking Taylor, and then there's suspecting that he sexually assaulted her and then is using it as blackmail slash revenge porn against her with Kyle, which is really outre for this show, and I hope is not what happened. I hope it's just something that, as usual, Taylor is boring and takes forever to come out. And a question mark?
The next morning, at his new place, Amanda tells Peter she likes it, but he complains about the charmless rented furniture and mass-produced art, which, like, no one told you to rent that. But when he comments on their loneliness, she changes the subject to breakfast. He hopes she brought tableware because he doesn't have any yet, which, like, you could have rented a furnished place that came with dishes. All of this is nonsense. But since she didn't think of that, she hurries out, offers a breakfast rain check. That's where we unsatisfyingly leave things with these two. Proceed.
I mean, they just have like 2,000 times more chemistry than anyone else, any like pair of people on the show except Kyle and Tori's pimp.
Yes.
But like during this whole scene, it's like, just feed each other with your hands and then fuck, please. Like, why is this being dragged out? Why am I being punished? Why am I personally being punished for the writers not being able to come up with anything good for them to do? But I mean, at least you get to watch a couple of pros working in this plot line, even though it's dumb and not believable that they wouldn't just get back together. But okay.
Yeah, it's frustrating. Hmm. We'll see what happens in Great Sexpectations. On to the B plot. Michael has crashed his car again. We pick up where the last episode left off, somewhere on Mulholland where Megan's car is upside down. Kimberly, unharmed, gets out to check on Michael, and Megan does too, less helpfully since she is not and never has been a doctor. But Michael's unconscious as Kimberly pulls him out, which I feel like a doctor would know not to move him. Like, RIP your spine, potentially. Hope that's okay.
Yeah, I just assume that there was some issue with, like, well, the car's about to blow up.
Right.
I mean.
Anyway, Kimberly screams at Megan about going there to try to save her. And as Megan then flags down another driver to call 911, Kimberly alternates doing CPR on Michael with cursing herself as we roll into the credits. On the other side of which, Peter and Matt are on duty in the ER as Michael's wheeled in, still unconscious, and a nurse assures Kimberly in her arm sling that she's going to be fine. But Kimberly is quietly enraged that this has even happened and blames Megan, who whines back that she couldn't let Kimberly die. There's a lot of Megan whining. Assume everything she says is a whine, by the way. The next day, Megan and Kimberly are outside Michael's hospital room, pacing and sniping at each other. And then all of Michael's machines start beeping, and Matt and Peter run in as we hear Michael flatlining. And then we cut inside his mind. He's in an infernal version of the courtyard with something red just roiling away in the pool. And a hand grabs his ankle. Then Kimberly breaks the surface, begging him to help her, reaching out a hand. And then over his other shoulder, an angelic Megan comes through the gate, telling him he doesn't belong there. And the devil and angel go back and forth in competition for Michael's soul. Do we think he has one of those?
Yeah.
It's a subject for discussion, I feel. But he decides to go with Megan as Kimberly calls after him. And then we're back at the hospital where actual Michael is still unconscious. And I don't care for this characterization of Kimberly, but angels are historically boring, so I'll accept it in this case.
Yeah, I also feel like this is, because this is happening in Michael's mind, mm-hmm. it's all suspect anyway, so.
Oh, well, of course, yes. But I'm saying even for him to put the two of them in those two roles, I don't buy it necessarily. But
I mean, maybe it's because he doesn't know what we know
right.
about what Kimberly's been up to.
Right, right.
But the fact is, this has been, like every other plot line in season 5, dragging on for mm-hmm. like months now. And,
yeah.
You know.
No, he doesn't. But he knows now. So maybe that's why. At this point, he does know.
Yeah, but he found out like 2 minutes before the crash.
That's
in which
right.
case,
right, right, right.
Yeah.
Okay. So outside, the crisis has led Megan and Kimberly to make peace with each other. And then Peter comes out, says Michael will be fine, and then just keeps moving, like does not stop to hug anyone or tell more details. Just like, bye. The ladies hug in relief. That was all very anticlimactic. And then it's the mm-hmm. next day. Michael wakes up and tells, and Megan tells him what happened. She's sorry she lied to him, but he understands why. And then, clip 5.
She did fine after the accident. You saved her life by running into her.
She pulled me. In my dream, she was pulling me down.
It wasn't a dream. She did. She pulled you from the wreckage.
No. She was pulling me into hell. It's the tumor. It makes her crazy. She wants it to kill both of us.
Oh, come on, Michael. She doesn't want you to die. Kimberly's been sacrificing herself for you ever since I met her.
Yeah. How do you figure that?
Well, for one thing, when she couldn't have sex, she gave me to you as a gift.
She was just feeling guilty.
Look, if you want to be upset with someone, be upset with me for the lies that I've told you and the secrets that I've kept. But listen, don't take it out on Kimberly. She loves you.
Yeah. She almost loved me to death.
Can you both enunciate? I mean, one of you is barely conscious, but Jesus, Megan, yeah. with a mush mouth.
Yeah.
Which, fine, but then Megan's like, she's going to die any minute now, so you need to spend as much time with her as you can, which is what he said in the last episode, and now Megan's on board. Whatever. Decide.
Yeah.
Decide how you feel about this stuff, please. Later. Yeah. Peter examines Michael and argues with him about how long Michael has to stay in the hospital. Peter finally warning Michael that Peter expects him back at the hospital at the office Monday, so he shouldn't try to act macho for his current babe, Megan. And then whips back the curtain to see Kimberly's there and heard everything. After Peter's gone, Kimberly admits that when she found out she was dying, she tried to cut Michael off. But now she knows she can ask him to spend her last few weeks with her and be with her when she dies. And he agrees to see her through it. And as Kimberly lies down with her head on Michael's chest, Megan walks in on the end of this and realizes she made a huge mistake. Whoops.
Yeah, she did. This scene before Megan entered it and made it 10 times more boring.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it because mm-hmm. I always enjoy scenes between actors when sort of, you know, that this is getting to the end of their relationship as co-workers in mm-hmm. these plots.
Yeah.
And when you can see that it's valedictory, not just for the characters, but for the actors sort of saying goodbye to this part of their professional lives. I always enjoy scenes like that. And watching these two do that was fun, I guess, for mm-hmm. me. I think Marcia Cross's character should have been killed off probably at the end of last season, but it's still a pleasure to watch her work. Unlike some people, Kelly Rutherford.
Yeah. With regard to the end of their relationship, though, she hangs on. She hangs on for a while. Like all okay. of this talk about she's dying. I mean, she is, but. We don't have to say goodbye to her for quite a few weeks.
Okay, good.
But I agree with you. It is nice. Sometime later, Megan brings a dish to the beach house. Michael comes out to say Kimberly's already asleep. As they're leaving, Kimberly comes out. Before Michael can hustle her back into bed, Kimberly asks if they would both be okay with Michael spending the night. And you can see in the visual aids their faces being like, no, but we know we can't say no. On the spot, Megan agrees, and Kimberly gives them privacy to say goodnight. Megan checks that it will be just one night, and Michael's like, totally, of course he'll be on the couch. And there aren't a lot of women who would be this understanding. Megan says she owes Kimberly a lot, because Kimberly gave Megan Michael. Kimberly calls for him and Michael pecks Megan on the cheek, but only gets as far as the deck. She only gets as far as the deck before she gets pissed. And inside, Kimberly asks Michael to hold her in bed, which he does, crooning that it's going to be okay. And outside, Megan seethes, and inside, Kimberly looks smug. And I approve on both counts. This is how I want things to shake out.
Mm-hmm. And it was like the first time Kelly Rutherford actually did some sort of compelling acting, was making this face sort of at herself.
Yeah.
While she's standing outside, like, which I was like, oh, finally, relatable. Thank you.
Finally, we have our A plot. Sydney takes a break from fucking with Sam to get some insight on Carter's whole deal, and Allison has doubts about her engagement. Jake brings Allison breakfast in bed with a diamond engagement ring that doesn't fit because she's retaining water. But you can see it in the visual aids. It seems fine. I don't know. They don't give it a hero shot.
It's very teeny. Mm-hmm. But it's like very simple. Also, it's not the usual like, ooh.
Yeah.
Marquee fugazi situation that they go with. So.
Yeah. It's also just under a saucer. It's not like presented in, you know, the box with the usual hoo-ha about it. So whatever. So then he takes off so fast. It seems like we're going to find out he did something he wasn't supposed to, but we don't. We do later find out where he goes. So even though Sydney has her own intermittently one-bedroom apartment, she shows up at Jane's old place with a box and announces to Sam that she is moving in. Now, I'm going to be screaming about this plot line for the rest of this episode because absolutely no part of it makes any sense at all.
Yeah. No.
Like, you have an upstairs apartment that's immediately more valuable than a downstairs apartment, especially since you live in Melrose Place. Any rando could be coming through here trying to kill you, including your neighbors.
And, like, technically, I think Matt's apartment is still open. And a question mark?
No, he moved back in.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But still, like, there's a bunch of empty apartments right now.
Right.
So who cares? Like, I think this is only to introduce conflict between Sam and Billy.
Right.
Which is also lawyer. Like, we'll get to it. But the whole thing is just so stupid and boring.
Like, here's the solution immediately. You know, Sam was living there by herself. If Sydney wants to live on the ground floor for some reason, you know, all she has to say is, this was my sister's place and I miss her and I want to feel closer to her with her things. Why don't you go live in my place?
Yeah.
That's A. B, another plausible explanation for why Sydney wouldn't want to live upstairs anymore is because she's hung up on Kyle and he lives next door.
Right.
Which, you know, she can't say that, but we could know that that was the reason, but it's not. Like, it's just, as pretexts for drama go, this is stupid and it only gets stupider. So,
yeah, agree.
Sam, who, as I noted last week, definitely cannot afford this rent on her own, gasps that she doesn't want Sydney as a roommate. Sydney's glad they agree. Sam can find her own place. And despite Jane's having promised Sam the apartment, since she is as good at real estate as she was at business, she never put Sam's name on the lease. And Sydney already had Amanda transfer her lease to this unit, which, like, what? No?
No.
It's not how leases work?
No.
So they both waylay Amanda in the courtyard to plead their cases, but she does not have time for their bullshit. Clip six.
Amanda, don't listen to her.
Make it snappy, you two. I've got to go to work and a funeral. It's already turning into a long day.
Jane said.
Jane's gone. Sydney wants that space and you're not on the lease. But Sydney's apartment is open now, so you're welcome to apply for it.
Well, I can't afford first and last. I can barely afford rent by myself.
Well, you can pay the deposit over time. You still have a job, don't you?
Actually, I was thinking about cutting back on our hours.
Oh, then I can't afford any place then.
Well, in that case, it was nice having you as a tenant.
I bet you could afford something in Maryland, where you're from, I think.
Yeah. Also, maybe don't tell your landlord you can barely afford the place she is currently renting you when you're trying to convince her to let you keep it by yourself.
Yeah. Or just take Sydney's apartment and don't tell Amanda anything. She doesn't really give a shit.
No, she doesn't. One note too about Josie Bassett's departure from the show. I had my timeline wrong. I think like a long time ago in the early season four, I said there were a couple of shots where she looked like she might be pregnant and trying to hide it, like with folders and stuff. A couple of people let us know this on our Twitter and elsewhere, that the reason she left the show was that she had a pregnancy loss and took a break from acting for a while. So I apologize for that. I know from following her on Instagram, she seems like she's doing great now. And so I hope
and
that
we've been valiantly following her career into the Wedding March franchise over at It's Christmas Town. So
yes, with Jack Wagner. So I hope she had a good break and that it was healing for her. She does come back to the show, but
yeah.
Just
but
to
she,
correct
I mean, she should have stayed gone.
Well,
that really did look quite crafty on Bassett's part. That it's like, just get out now.
Yeah, good timing. Let Rob take this paycheck for the both of you.
Yeah, really.
Anyway, thank you everyone who let us know about their correction. And sorry, I did not note that when we were talking about it the last two times. Sam and Sydney's bullshit continues at the store, where Sydney's once again bitching that Sam's bad at her job. Sam dares Sydney to fire her, but Sydney promised Jane she wouldn't. So in what sense is this her business to run? One might ask. Like, Jane, you're not here. You can't make prohibitions on who does and doesn't work there.
Yeah.
Before the fight can escalate, Carter appears, and Sydney tells Sam she's leaving for the day, even though it's only lunchtime. And outside, Sydney sees Carter chartered an open-topped Star Tour bus for the two of them. They're even going to go to Marilyn Monroe's bungalow, as seen in Sam's first weird painting, and he brought bologna sandwiches.
In the background of that shot is a Mercedes hardtop two-door, and I was like, that he's like, your chariot awaits, and I was like, oh, is that the 560? I could spot an old Benz in any of these shots, and I always do. I spared you of the visual aids this time, but no, if you're watching along with us, I saw it.
Mm. Carter also has an announcement. He is taking the weekend off. Sydney doesn't believe they'll even make it to Wilshire before Walter calls, but Carter says Walter doesn't know he's going. And when we see them next, they're getting out of Carter's helicopter at the ranch where he grew up in Northern California. He brings her into the barn where he took apart his first Atari. He wanted to make it more real for himself, but reality has never lived up to his fantasies. Sydney says she never had any. She just scooped up Jane's leftovers. He thinks that sounds shitty, but she thought of it as abandoned treasure. And Carter loves that about Sydney. And she gets close to his face, and then you can see this in the visual aids. A huge horsefly shoots through the frame in front of their faces right before they're supposed to kiss.
Oh, my God.
Which she eventually does lean in and kiss him. The fly
Rex
continues buzzing.
Rex, we told you, no pets. Oh.
So then some old dude, presumably the ranch's current owner, comes in to tell Carter to move his helicopter because it's scaring his chickens, which we've all been there. Back at Sydney's, Sam bitches to Billy about everything going wrong in her life. Billy claims that since Amanda has known Sam was living at Jane's place, she can't kick Sam out because of squatter's rights, and Sam should get a lawyer. She happens to know one who happens to be an ex, and then Billy's like, oh no. Speaking of oh no, Jake drives Allison to see a house for sale behind a white picket fence and everything. Allison isn't sure she's ready for this. Allison, if you buy that house and hold it for 25 years, it is going to be worth $3 million, not the $180,000 it is probably currently listed for. You dummy.
Yeah.
But this like, moron...
I'm sorry you have to live in Tarzana, but these are the them's the breaks.
This moron's worried about their lease with Amanda and their friends at the building. And Jake says their friends can visit them there. Sidebar, they won't. They will not go that far. He wants to show her the kitchen, which I don't think we have any evidence Allison cooks, but she doesn't even want to go inside. Clip 7.
This isn't about decor. This is about our life.
Okay. All my life, I told myself that if I ever had a kid, growing up would be different for him. Well, I did become a dad, and guess what? I blew it. I couldn't handle it. I ran away from everything. Well, this is a chance for me to do it again. This is a chance for me to do it right. With a yard and a fence.
Jake, we can make our life together anywhere.
any life we want.
Yeah, but this is the way I see it.
This was another thing people pointed out to us after the last couple of episodes. Oh, yeah, Jake already has a kid. I totally forgot about that child, as Jake apparently did until right now.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Like, decide if you want them together or not. But, like, yeah. I don't know. Like, just decide if you want them together or not. Like, there's absolutely no reason for there to be conflict. Yes, I understand it's a primetime soap opera, but, like, he didn't buy it.
Right.
Looking is free.
Mm-hmm.
Fight about it while you're flushing all the toilets in the house. I don't know.
Yeah.
Have the writers met actual people?
Yeah. Like, you know, her objections seem like bullshit because they are. Like, they can't come up with any reasons why, if she is in this relationship and happy to be with him, why she wouldn't want to be planning their life together. Like, what about our lease? Fuck your lease. You're renting. Like, that's the point of renting.
And also, if the commute to Shooters is punitive, then say that.
Right, right.
I'm sure it is, but whatever.
Yeah. But they're playing this like he's somehow trapped her in this relationship, like going back to when he, you know, spontaneously offered her to be a partner.
Yeah.
Because every stage of this, she's like, I don't know. Like, what do you want? This is what's frustrating about the writing is that they again, much like with Peter and Amanda, they just need to contrive reasons for them to have conflict in an episode. But all of these confrontations end the same way with her being like, okay, I guess. And then a shot of her like hugging him and looking sadly over his shoulder. Like, do you want this or don't you? Like, I don't, I can't tell from the writing or from her performance really, like what we're supposed to think is the problem.
Well, and I mean, Courtney Thorne-Smith is not like, she doesn't suck at this. So I have to assume that like, even the writers don't know when she asked and they were like, we don't know.
Just
like, like leave it, you know, play it open.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Maybe Jake has another brother who's about to come to town with his estranged girlfriend. Like anything could happen on this show. Literally.
It's true. And probably is going to in a 2-hour episode. Yikes.
Yeah. The next night, Sam is bringing a nervous Billy to Kyle's for dinner with her lawyer ex, painting an unflattering picture of this guy so that Billy won't be threatened. He has an oily manner and expensive suits, etc. But the guy waiting for them is in jeans and a blazer and seems very friendly and down to earth, just like Billy thinks he is. This dude's name is Kenny Jackson, and apparently he has changed since Sam knew him. He is treating everyone better, including himself, and he quit his Century City law firm to run a storefront legal clinic, and Sam is happy for him. Clip 8.
Why haven't you called me?
Too embarrassed? I behaved so badly with Sam. I can't believe you got back in touch with me.
I think she just needs some legal advice.
Right, yeah. She told me the whole problem on the phone. You know what I don't get is why don't you two just move in together at Billy's place? I mean, you got a lease, don't you?
Yeah.
I mean, Sam and I, we got our own place after, what was that? I had 3 weeks together.
Four, I think.
Yeah, four maybe. Haven't you two been together that long?
No, not exactly.
Yeah, well, no matter. We'll get this whole thing all straightened out. How about some wine first? Yeah?
All right.
Yeah. Loosens things up, whether we're whispering words of love or contract law.
Run, Kenny. You're too good for this show.
You are. You're definitely too good for this idiot.
Oh, my God.
In San Francisco, Carter and Sydney discuss their visit to Alcatraz as they walk into a very large hotel suite. Carter has not had a day like this since he bought out a whole circus performance. He needed cheering up. Clip 9.
Yeah, I heard about breaking up with your last girlfriend.
How did you hear about that?
Walter mentioned something.
Yeah, I did have a girlfriend. But, the thing is, the more serious we got, the more she wanted me to change. To grow up, and so I tried, but then I had trouble creating my computer games, which, of course, the kid in me makes. So,
what happened?
I started having real trouble with work, so she left me.
A jerk. Her, I mean.
Yeah, I guess. See, the problem is, I'm still creatively blocked.
Walter mentioned that too.
Is there anything that he didn't mention?
How would I know if he didn't mention it?
You know, you were quite the diplomat.
I've been called a lot of things. Never a diplomat.
I thought I was insane. So I went back and watched all of the Walter Sidney scenes, starting with him suggesting that he could pay her to hang out with Carter. None of them say one fucking thing about a girlfriend. This is all brand new information.
Yeah. I mean, either they shot it and it got cut, or it's yet another, like, the season five disease of, like, why was this conversation not on screen?
Yes.
Oh, that's right, because they're shooting 17 things at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And who cares? Like, is the purpose to reassure us that she's not taking his virginity? Because who cares about that?
Right, right.
Make it an issues plot.
Sure. I mean, I feel like at the start of this, it was going in the direction I thought it was, which was he's agoraphobic and he stays at his complex. Because all of the issues with them at the beginning were he was working all the time. He was on calls. He had video conferences, etc. Like, it doesn't seem like he was blocked. It seemed like he was working a lot, or at least, you know, doing administrative shit is not working, as we know, necessarily. But, like, still, it didn't seem like he was frustratedly, like, up in his turret trying to crack whatever game he's working on. Like, that would have made more sense if that was the problem with him.
Yeah, it would have. That it, like, was more of a Howard Hughes thing. But it's like, are you trying to distinguish between him and Microcomp?
Yeah.
The fuck was that guy's name? Steve?
Steve.
Steve.
Yeah.
Like, how many of these Zuckerbergs do we need?
Yeah. But it also would have, right. But it would have also made sense why Walter was trying to, you know, line someone up to, like, essentially was trying to DoorDash him a friend, as if he couldn't, like, go out anywhere because he didn't want to.
Yeah. I mean, at least, like, this is also dumb and it's not super exciting, but they're cute. Like,
yeah, they're
they don't
cute.
Have a ton of chemistry because he really does still present as this child, even though I don't know how old he was at this point. 30s, well, probably.
Maybe.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, it's like, it's fine. They're sweet. It's about to go pear shaped for her, but every now and then she gets to win and it's nice to see.
He would have been around like 29 at this point.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, he was still young. But yes, it's a different vibe for her too in terms of love interest. Like, she's never dated a guy like this before who's like sort of weird and awkward and nerdy.
And only a couple inches taller than her?
Yeah. Yes.
This kid is little.
He is wee. Anyway, eventually, there's more kissing. Carter warns Sidney he's very out of practice, but she says it's okay. She's a very good teacher. Back to Kyle's, where dinner is over. Kenny is assuring Sam that he can help her, and Billy and his wilted hair, seen in the visual aids, look pissed. Billy grabs the check as Sam offers to wait with Kenny for his car, which, like, that would be an appropriate thing for Kenny to offer her. It's weird the other way around if she's not actually trying to fuck him.
Yeah. There might be ruffians about.
Okay. Right? Like, just wait for Billy to pay. All of you walk out together. Be normal. Anyway, Billy pretends it's fine as they leave him. Kenny wrapping his arm around Sam's shoulders, which you can also see in the visual aids. And the next morning, Sidney gets up at 6 a.m. to Carter already pecking away at his power book, which is not what anyone built video games on then, I'm pretty sure. Dave can let me know. I don't think Macs were used for construction. He's not paying attention. She thought he was trying to get away from business. He lectures that this is fun. He figured out the glitch in the game that he couldn't finish. She flirts that she unblocked him, but he just wants to get back to LA so he can work some more. And she tries to convince him to spend another day away with her, but he just keeps working and ignoring her. And she sadly says they can book the next flight, which I refuse to believe this guy has a helicopter, but not a private jet, first of all.
Mm-hmm.
Second, anyone who's like, he just rented the helicopter. No, the guy we have not seen could not do that without Walter's help. I'm sorry.
Yeah, agree.
So then Billy is stopping Sam on her way through the courtyard. She's so grateful he told her to talk to a lawyer and that she may be able to save her apartment. But Billy is ramping up to suggest that they move in together. Kenny walks in behind her with a letter for Amanda, and Billy slinks off. And Amanda is totally unfazed by Kenny's letter and shrugs that Sam can totally stay if she signs a lease. But Sydney's already signed, so they'll have to be roommates. That's not how tenancy works. Literally every person watching would know that. This isn't like some business thing. People know how renting apartments works. Everyone has lived in one.
Yeah. It's like when people will let you out of your work contract. Like, that's not how that works.
Right.
I am quitting. Like, it. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's, you know, slavery. Like,
well,
that's not how that works. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Ugh. Still, Kenny's like, well, great, bye. And Sydney passes him as he leaves, Sydney looking very sad. Amanda informs her that Sam signed a lease, so you'll have to work it out. No, just go live in the apartment you already had, rather than both of you idiots sharing this one-bedroom apartment!
Oh, my God. Also, Jane's, like, dinnerware is hideous.
Yeah.
There's a lot of fucking sunflowers in there. Like, just go back to your own apartment. It's fine.
Yes. Where you have shirts hanging on picture frame hooks in the living room for some reason. Anyway, Amanda eventually gets around to suggesting one of them can go and live in Sydney's old place, but Sydney whines that Jane's place was meant to be hers and it's much nicer than her place upstairs. Identical layout. So Amanda and Sam leave. Sydney sadly plops onto her suitcase. Poor Sid. Some more, as usual.
Oh, hashtag free Sydney.
Yeah. So Billy's working at D&D that night when Sam runs in with another bag of human rights Chinese food, you can see in the visual aids, and the great news about her apartment. I guess she didn't have time that entire day to phone him, but it's soon dulled by Billy's jealousy. Clip 10.
Kenny had her wrapped around his little finger. He was fantastic.
You're really getting a soft spot for these smooth operators, aren't you?
What do you mean?
Craig and Kenny. Looks like there's a pattern starting to emerge.
No. Kenny's changed.
Right into sheep's clothing.
He's my lawyer.
Like you weren't all over him at dinner?
Look, you don't have to be jealous. You're my guy.
No, fuck off. That's the end of that conversation.
Yeah. Also, I mean, first of all, go with Kenny. He's better in every way.
Yeah.
Second of all, what is with the weird line readings and like wrapped around his little fingers? Like, please, every now and then, just for funsies or for Christmas, let them have a second take.
Just
in
one.
Billy's case, it won't help. But
right.
Samantha maybe could do something with it. So please, mm-hmm. You're my guy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Smithers screensaver.
Yeah. Elsewhere, supposedly Carter's office, based on what we see inside, but I checked, the shot of the exterior that they use is Jackie Taylor's
it's
house.
Absolutely.
From 902 Widow. No, it is. Jackie confirmed. Taylor's. It is.
Yeah. No, I know. And I assume there's a microwave in the boardroom.
Yes, no doubt. Sydney's inside, excited to talk to Carter about something in the paper when Walter enters instead and acts inappropriate. Clip 11.
Oh, I take it you did sleep with him this weekend. Well, was it as good for you as it was for the corporation?
I am sure that is none of your business.
And speaking of business.
Business.
Your services will no longer be required.
I have already told you my relationship with Carter has nothing to do with money. I like him. I don't like you. Where is he? What are you doing? Let go of me.
Protecting the company. Carter's breakthrough will carry us through 2 more years at least. And you'd just be a distraction at this point. You're already too big an influence.
That is ridiculous.
Take her home, please.
What is... Let go of me! Carter!
So Carter runs in on the end of this. Walter smoothly covers, saying that Sydney demanded payment to spend time with him, and now Carter should just focus on his first love, computer games. And that's the end. Let's close it up by naming our episode MVP.
Is this still the chicken episode? Or was that the last episode? Okay, I couldn't remember.
And to that point, chicken guy, winner of the week.
Mm-hmm. Foghorn Leghorn. Absolutely.
Least valuable player.
Walter?
Yeah, I think that's fair, but along the same lines, I'm going to say Nick because something's going on there and I don't like it.
Yeah, I don't like it either. And unfortunately, it's going to take us another 78 episodes to find out exactly what it is.
Yep.
But that's not happening next time on Again With This.
Nope.
Next time on Again With This, pledge your allegiance to the redhead, white, and blue, because we're going to be pulling back the paywall curtain on two Again With This episodes featuring, like we said, American hero Laura Layton, Layton's Dynasty performance, and TV true crime movie A Texas Tragedy. Speaking of tragedies, the visual aids. You can confront those for this and every other episode of Again With This at againwiththispodcast.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at AWT90210. You can join the Patreon fun at patreon.com/againwiththis. And you can call us or text us at our Google Voice number, 210-920-4699. And we hope you will. There's a whole upcoming episode featuring your questions and comments. Again, 210-920-HO-99. Get into it. I'm Sparkly Breakfast Garnish Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Zero Star Funeral Review, Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is Double Decker, David T. Cole. Talk to you next time. Ooh. What?